May it please the Court. Michael Kmeta, appearing on behalf of the appellants. I plan to spend 5 or 6 minutes discussing the theme of this case, which also emphasizes my client's strongest points, and if possible, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of rebuttal time. Discussing the overall theme in this case will help the Court see the big picture. Going beyond the law for a moment, as a matter of public policy, fairness, and justice, the societal costs of banning vehicle leafleting are too high as opposed to any benefit to the city. And the absence of evidence establishes that the ordinance cures no evil. But the law does ban an important type of speech identified by the Supreme Court as essential to the poorly financed causes of little people. In this case, the city is banning political activists from walking on public streets and sidewalks, where speech is greatly protected, to place leaflets on private property, where speech is even more protected, to cure a problem that the city has failed to prove even exists, because it failed to offer any evidence whatsoever that vehicle leafleting causes a litter problem in the city. The law is unconstitutional for many independently dispositive reasons, but when all these issues are distilled to their core, this case really revolves around the same central issue. Does a complete ban on vehicle leafleting create a proper balance between an unproven problem, litter prevention, and the constitutional right of free speech? And even if a litter problem did exist, the city has far less restrictive alternatives from which to choose to properly balance litter prevention against free speech.
But it doesn't have to use the very least restrictive, does it?
That is correct. And there's a two-part test, one of which the Court just stated. The other part is whether there are less restrictive alternatives. And in this case, the city has at least 3 less restrictive alternatives. They can, if someone actually receives a leaflet and discards it, they can fine that person for litter. They can have a law in place to require that leaflets are securely placed on vehicles, for example, under a windshield wiper, so that a litter problem is not created. Mm. And they can also place the burden and shift that burden from the city to demand that if someone doesn't want speech on their own private property, in this case vehicles, that person can put a sign or placard on the vehicle.
So, I mean, it seems to me that's all very simple and straightforward. But what's harder about this case or what it is if you start thinking that the putting it on the car is litter or visual blight. And it seems to me your hardest case is taxpayers versus Vincent. So it would be helpful to me if you center your argument around that question. In other words, it seems to me if their problem is people are going to get the pieces of paper and throw them on the floor, then Schneider and that whole line of cases are fairly dispositive. But if their problem is we don't want people having to walk around the street seeing pieces of paper on cars, that's, it seems to me, and as I understand it, the way the courts have dealt with this issue, too, was to look at that as the litter or as visual blight, one or the other. And it would help be helpful to me if you addressed the issues that way.
Sure. And there's a big difference between taxpayers for Vincent where it involved signs, because people were hanging signs for political campaigns, for other reasons, probably for concerts, and those signs would hang maybe 30 days, 60 days. No one ever took them down. And over time, they fell down, and they create a blight problem, they create a litter problem, because of the amount of time that these signs were hanging on public property. In this case, you're dealing with simply a leaflet that's placed on a vehicle, and someone's going to come back in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, maybe an hour or two, and they're going to take that leaflet off the vehicle, especially if it's secured. And the other difference with taxpayers for Vincent is that case dealt with only the control of the government over its very own property, which were, and I make a big point of that in my briefs, the fact that that case dealt with utility poles, which this court stated were public property, and the government was simply controlling its own property and saying, listen, people.
No, this court didn't state that. This court got reversed.
Not on that issue. Not on the factual issue that it was government that was actually controlling its very own property. Here, the government is trying to control private property.
Would it make any difference if those telephone poles were privately owned?
That's actually a pretty good question.
Well,
as the signs, like I said, there's a big difference between signs and leaflets. So we're dealing with leaflets.
Well, it certainly would make a difference if the people who owned the signs wanted to, who owned the poles wanted the signs on them.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a big difference between an ordinance where the city comes in and says, hey, Mr. Property Owner, if you don't want, for example, let's take a shopping mall. If you don't want people to place leaflets on vehicles located in your shopping mall, we're passing this ordinance so you can prohibit that. Okay, and there's a big difference between that type of ordinance and an ordinance which says...
A prohibition for them.
Exactly. That no matter whether you're an unwilling recipient or whether you're just an uncommitted listener who may or may not want...
I mean, isn't Judge Minor's example essentially Metro Media and all the billboard cases? In other words, if people want to put signs on their own property, then there's a whole different set of laws,
exactly,
which is much less forgiving in terms of the government's interest.
Exactly. You know, property owners have a bundle of rights, and one of those bundle of rights is to exclude property on their very, you know, exclude speech on their property. And again, there's a huge difference between that and the government just saying, listen, you can't put these leaflets on any private property, even if someone willingly wants these leaflets.
Of course, we don't know who wants them and who doesn't want them, which is one of the prime difficulties with allowing this. Suppose instead of the leaflets, somebody puts a large poster on the car. According to your argument, that would be allowable also.
No, and that's one of the differences between this ordinance and the ordinance in Job, because if you read the Job case carefully, the ordinance differed from this one because it actually precluded people from placing any kind of stickers, like bumper stickers, on someone else's car.
I'm just saying you take a big poster carrying your message and you put it on the car. Under your argument, that seems to be acceptable.
No, because there's a difference between a leaflet in which you're giving information for someone to accept and read and the public display on a vehicle for third parties to look at. There's a big difference between those two scenarios.
You're saying this ordinance is unconstitutional on its face. Is that right?
On its face and as applied to the facts of this case.
Well, I'm talking about now on its face. It just says don't throw anything on the cars. Is that what it says? Basically.
I believe so, yes, Your Honor.
So that includes leaflets or anything else?
I believe so. Let me take a quick look at the actual language of the law. What the law says is no person shall throw or deposit any commercial or non-commercial advertisement in or upon any vehicle. So, yes, it would include any placards or large signs like that as well. And, again, the city hasn't produced any evidence of any such problem.
You're making both an on-its-face and as-applied challenge.
Yes, Your Honor.
On-its-face challenges are not very popular these days.
That's correct. And on-its-face is mostly as to the fact that it's facially overbroad, because it not only bans speech that might create a problem, but it bans speech by its very nature that wouldn't cause a problem. For example, to willing recipients, they're willing, so they're not going to litter. And also for the situation where leaflets are placed underneath a windshield wiper.
But we could decide both of those questions just based on the actual facts of the case.
Absolutely, yes.
Because as far as I can tell, you were putting there's no evidence that there were any signs in any of the cars saying don't put stickers on here or don't put leaflets on here, and there's no evidence that these were anything but plain old leaflets, right?
That's correct.
So we even have the leaflet. We know what it was. It was just a piece of paper with...
Right. I believe the actual leaflet is in the record as an exhibit to Mr. Klein's declaration.
But there's nothing that requires you to put it under the windshield wiper either. You could just lay it on the car, right?
Well, that's one of the reasons the ordinance isn't narrowly tailored, because one of the situations where the city could come in and narrowly tailor this ordinance is by requiring someone to put a leaflet under a windshield wiper, so there's no way that the wind or rain could actually blow the leaflet away. And if you read the facts, that's exactly what my clients were doing. They were actually placing these leaflets under the windshield wipers on vehicles.
There's a lot of dispute in the record and with the district court and so on about what's, A, do we apply, does it matter if we apply California law or federal law? Does it matter if we look at this as public or private property? Do all of those different theories all come out in the same place, which is we apply a time, place, or manner standard? Is that right? So ultimately, all doesn't matter.
Well, it's a little unclear between California law and even amongst federal law where this whole idea of the right to receive speech and willing recipients falls in. Because sometimes courts look at it under a narrowly tailored test. Sometimes they look at it under facially overbroad. And in some cases, especially under California Supreme Court law, they kind of look at it as its own unique test that stands by itself.
Well, ultimately, when this case comes back on the merits, is it your suggestion that it's decided under California law or under federal law?
Well, California law is more appropriate because the Ninth Circuit has stated that if you can decide it under the California Constitution, then you should, to avoid any federal questions. And like I just stated, there is a slight difference between them because California law under the Van Nuys decision seems to look at willing recipients as an independent test that's independent from the three-pronged test under time, place, and manner. And that case even refers to uncommitted listeners, so it has a little bit of a looser standard than willing recipients.
So Judge Reinhart just alluded to something that's important. What really do we have to decide in this case, given that this is a preliminary injunction appeal, and given that there is a lot of law, as you point out, that a First Amendment interest is almost automatically in this circuit an irreparable harm, and given the fact that everybody's been fighting so hard about where this, that there are two circuit court cases that come out opposite way, there's lots of paper being strewn about the First Amendment implications of this case, that there's certainly a serious First Amendment problem. Do we have to decide anything else? Should we decide anything else now, other than there's a serious First Amendment problem?
Well, yes, so my clients obviously want to get back on the streets and continue to hand out
right,
leaflets.
No,
what Judge Berzon is saying is on a preliminary injunction, as opposed to the merits, the issue is there a serious legal question? And if so, is the balance of hardships in your favor because there's a purported interference with the First Amendment? Is that the proper test? And if you do present a serious legal issue, and if under your theory there's an interference with the First Amendment, and that would entitle you to a preliminary injunction, we could answer that question possibly in your favor. But all your clients would go back on the street, and then you'd go back to the district court, and then it would decide the merits, and then it would come back again. I guess one question we could ask you both is whether you want us to treat this as a preliminary injunction issue, in which case, as Judge Berzon said, the issue is not very difficult. We don't have to decide any of the kinds of questions you're raising. Or are you both interested in getting a final decision and stipulate to that this would be the injunction on the merits?
I would be willing to do that because the facts are undisputed in this case. They're very simple.
Well, it would take both of you to say that, so we'll ask your opponent the same question, is it?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
All right. You wanted to save 5 minutes. You've got 6.5, basically. So.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Ed Richards, representing the City of San Clemente.
Maybe we ought to start out with the same question. It's a fairly narrow question if we're just going to decide the preliminary injunction question.
And my response to it is the opposite.
You want us just to decide the preliminary injunction?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So then that's what we ought to be discussing. Is there a serious legal issue?
And in this case, I think for the reasons that the district court concluded, there is not.
Well, he didn't exactly put it that way.
No, they didn't put it that way.
And he really didn't. So he wasn't exactly deciding the right question for whatever reason. I don't know why that was. But he went much further toward a decision on the merits, given the First Amendment context here, than he really needed to go, it appears to me.
Well, I don't disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
If I may make this observation.
Mm-hmm.
This is a First Amendment case, and like I think all First Amendment cases, it's a matter of balancing the government's interest and the individual's First Amendment interest. And in this case, the rights under the California Constitution.
Right, okay.
it's clear under California that even on private property there is a right to free speech. There's no doubt about that. But there's also no doubt but that that right to free speech or expression, even on private property, is not unrestricted.
Of course. But this is a little different because, I mean, there's been a lot of argument about whether this is a public forum case or a private property case, and the truth is it's both.
I think it makes no difference.
And that may not make a difference. It also may not make a difference. But in Pruneyard, in those cases, what you have is the government imposing on the private property, on owners of private property, the requirement to allow other people to perform speech on their property, over their objection, right?
Correct.
And the point that's being made here is that that's not really the issue here, because no one cares whether there's an objection. It doesn't matter if there's an objection.
That would be correct under this.
So I don't see how this is similar to the California cases, which from the point of view of the private property regulation have recognized that the private property owner can set essentially set regulations as to when they're going to allow speech on their property. It's just not analogous. It's not the same problem.
Well, when I make reference to the California cases, the point that I was trying to make was this, that whether it's private property or it's public property, if you look at, I think, the totality of the cases that have been decided, they are all decided the same way. They apply the time.
If the government says to me, you in your house can't have a political meeting except under time, place, and manner restrictions, they can't do that, right? It's
correct.
My private property, and I can use it as I please for speech if I want to do it.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay. So that's the problem, because Pruneyard in those cases are about the opposite scenario, right? And here you're making an assumption that people don't want these flyers on their property, but you don't know that.
Well, actually, we're making the assumption, the government is making the assumption that some people don't want it. I mean, we can see
okay,
that
and
some
people do. And so there's a very easy way to deal with that, which is to tell people who don't want it to put a little sticker. There are lots of stickers on cars that says, no flyers, please.
Well, in all due respect, I think that is pie in the sky. I mean, theoretically, that would be nice, but I think that's unenforceable.
Well, suppose that the Los Angeles Times decided to give away Sunday newspapers in order to get new subscribers. And they went down the road and threw over the fence a whole Sunday edition of the papers. And the local government said you couldn't do that. Here we got a different kind of problem, aesthetic problem that fits into this, does it not?
I think it fits into both situations.
I mean, whether the person wanted that Sunday Times or not, that person is going to get it. But it may glitter the whole neighborhood.
Correct.
So I think that there may be an analogy there. But my question is about the balance of hardships, if we're going to talk about the preliminary injunction. If where do the hardships lie preliminarily? It doesn't seem to lie with those who want to distribute because they have other means of communication.
Agreed. Whereas...
So have I made your argument for you?
You did, Your Honor. Thank you very much. On the other side, if the ordinance is struck down, then the government has no way to regulate the perceived problem of litter with regard to
private
automobiles.
You really think the government could pass a statute saying that people can't give free newspapers to people on their own property?
I'm sorry?
You really think the government could pass an ordinance saying that newspapers couldn't distribute, put their newspapers in my driveway?
Sunday edition.
In the Sunday edition?
Sunday edition.
How about the Monday edition? Let's say the Monday edition.
Very little left of it with the Los Angeles Times.
That's true.
I couldn't find, are there any cases... There are all these cases about going door-to-door, which obviously do say that there are limitations to government's ability to protect private property owners when the countervailing issue is speech, and essentially propose the solution. You can put if you don't want somebody there, put a sign up, and that can be enforced. But are there any cases specifically about leaving leaflets on porches, for example?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor.
And there's some sense in the cases that that's less intrusive. And, you know, you should, I mean, reading through the cases last night, I mean, some, one of the dissents says, well, they shouldn't be able to knock on the door, but they should be able to leave the leaflets on the porch. But there's no exact case on that, is there?
Not that I'm aware of, no. And
is there, what are we to make of the fact, is there any evidence in the record or anywhere else that this is really a problem? I mean, that for the city in any concrete, at least on a preliminary injunction level.
If you look at the record, I think what the record demonstrates is in generalities that litter is a problem and that...
But litter, I mean, if by litter you mean stuff on the floor. I mean, there's just too many Supreme Court cases.
No, I agree with you. We're talking about litter on the ground. We're not talking about the flyer on the...
So you're talking about stuff on the ground. People have got...
Correct.
But there's myriad Supreme Court cases about that.
But I think what the record reflects in response to your first question is that if the pamphlets are displayed in this way, they're going to end a majority of them are going to end up on the ground.
Where is the record of that?
I can't point it out to you.
I don't think it's there. I don't think there's any evidence at all. The only evidence is the plaintiffs, which isn't very informative either, that their experience is that very little goes in the ground. There's nothing from the city as far as I know. Zero. I mean, I think it's zero.
I can't point to it.
Yeah, I don't think there are any affidavits on this. It's,
And the plaintiffs are just anecdotal. I mean, their observations.
Correct. Right. Correct. You're right. You're correct.
But what we do have is a limitation on speech on the one hand, and a limitation which Judge Minor points out may not be a ban because there are other ways that you may be able to communicate your message, such as a television advertisement that your opponent's just like Britney Spears. So you can do it that way if you can spend $1 million. Or maybe some other way, stop people on the street and say, by the way, I want to tell you about this wonderful initiative we have, and try to talk to
them. Or distribute it to occupants of vehicles.
Yeah, you can give it to the people who happen to be sitting in their cars. So you're not totally prohibited from doing it, but you hope you'll reach more people. And then on the other hand, you have the desire not to have litter on city streets, but without any showing that how much litter it results in, if any. We may all suspect that there'll be a lot of litter. And we've got the fact that the city council has passed an ordinance because they fear litter. And isn't that about all we have before us? In one case, we know it limits it, and we have the affidavit. And we know there are other ways to make speech. And on the other hand, we know the council fears that there'll be litter, and that's about what we have.
And I think that's correct, and I would simply restate it by stating the record, we don't quantify the litter problem, but we do quantify the plaintiff's availability of alternative avenues.
But in terms of the litter problem, isn't the Supreme Court case law just preclusive on that point? When in Schneider and other cases, they say, if you have a litter problem, ban the littering. And I don't see what's different between people handing things out and people putting them in the cars as to that issue.
Well, I think one of the reasons is that there's really two interests to support the ordinance. One is litter, but the other is the protection of private property, the owners of vehicles who don't want leaflets placed on their car.
But as a practical matter.
That's not litter. That's, you were talking about litter on the street.
No, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is there are two substantiations or justifications for the ordinance. One is the litter, and the second is the protection of those personal property rights. for those people.
But we've been over. I mean, it seems to me that they both have major problems. The first one is that the Supreme Court's talked about it a lot, and the second one is that the private property rights cut both ways, that we don't know that the people don't want this on their property.
I can't deny that.
And also, these documents, as while they're going on the car, in terms of the appearance, I mean, we put parking tickets under the windshield. People put all kinds of things in their cars. I mean, the notion that we're trying to protect against visual blight when people stick all kinds of, you know, bizarre things on their cars and bumper stickers and signs and so on seems somewhat fanciful.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is there is no black and white answer, and I think that we find that with the majority of our First Amendment cases.
The that answers the first question. It's a serious legal issue. And then we get to what Judge Minor said, is where is the balance of hardships?
And if I may, the point that I would like to make is that all of these cases, and I submit that's the way this case should be decided, are upon application of the time, place, and manner criteria and analysis. And under this case.
But we're not deciding the case.
But that's what the.
You're just saying, is there a serious legal issue?
But that is what the district court did. And I would respectfully submit that unless you find an abuse of discretion with its decision, well,
this
that I
is
think
a purely legal issue, really.
Well, but besides which, there was probably an abuse of discretion just in deciding more than he needed to decide and not deciding simply whether there was a serious legal issue.
Yeah, well, we have two prongs to this question on the preliminary. And one is it a serious legal issue? And it seems to me you just said yes. And the second is what Judge Minor inquired about, which is where is the balance of hardships?
Correct. I agree with that.
And so that's what we really ought to be talking about. And I think Judge Minor pretty well laid out the issue, which is, you know, is the fact that this isn't a total ban, but there are other ways of getting your message across to some people. Does that then minimize the First Amendment issue so that the harm to the city outweighs it? And the harm to the city, we don't have anything in the record as to whether the people who are getting it, whose private property is going to receive these leaflets, whether there are more or less who like getting it, or does it matter that there's one person who doesn't like it, or 10, or 10%, or 20%, you know, where we have no facts? Or does it matter that, you know, there's one piece of paper, a ton of paper on the streets? Do we need evidence of that? Or does the fact that it will result in some litter, how do we weigh all that against the First Amendment infringement in order to find hardship? I think that's our problem. But
I think that's the issue.
Okay.
Well, it's up to the movement to show that the balance of hardship tips in its favor. Has it shown that?
It has not.
Why?
As I said before, while the record does not adequately quantify the extent of the litter problem, I think the record clearly demonstrates the alternative avenues available.
Well, but what they basically say is, yes, we have alternatives, but they're worse.
They're saying they're just inadequate.
Inadequate may not be a hardship.
Correct. I mean, I think that really is the decision that your honors have to make, is to look at the alternative avenues.
Well, if it's inadequate, then there's a hardship, no?
Well, I question whether.
What about the Sammartino case? Do you know that one? Sammartino, which is the one about the people wearing gang insignia or motorcycle club insignia in court, inside a court. And that was a preliminary injunction case, which is why it's interesting. And the question was whether there to issue a preliminary injunction, which we did. And with regard to the First Amendment issue, let's see. Well, my impression is, although I can't find it right this minute, that let's see. The Supreme Court, this again is an instance where, I mean, if what they're trying to do is to simply tell people about their club, they can do it right outside the courthouse. So the question is, do they have a right to do it inside the courthouse? And the Supreme Court has made clear that the loss of First Amendment freedoms for even minimal periods of time constitutes irreparable injury. And the fact that a case raises serious First Amendment questions compels the finding that there's a potential for irreparable injury. So it seems to me that was the closest in case, but you're not aware of it.
You know, I recall the case, but I did not review it in connection with this case, and obviously.
Yeah. It is a preliminary injunction case. Yes. That's why it was interesting. Aside from the, I mean, the rest of it is not particularly analogous, but the First Amendment aspect, the preliminary injunction aspect.
And I don't recall it with sufficient detail to comment on it.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I'll actually start with the San Martino case, because I actually wanted to make a point about that particular case. That was a case where dealing with a non-public forum, so you're dealing with a reasonableness test rather than time, place, and manner. And even under that much lower threshold, what the court said in that case is there must be evidence in the record to support a determination that the restriction is reasonable. And again, there is no evidence in the record here whatsoever under a much higher standard, the time, place, and manner test, versus simply a reasonableness test.
So I think what about the other prong, that is the First Amendment irreparable harm question? I mean, certainly, I mean, we may be somewhat cavalierly moving that sentence from one kind of case to another, in the sense that plainly, if people can't speak at all, there's irreparable harm. But what about if they can speak, but less so?
Well, I think Eldorado was very clear that it was what you looked at, whatever type was being affected, in this case a vehicle leafleting ban, and not just the whole universe. So it's a test that's separate than the third prong under time, place, and manner, which is whether you have other alternatives that you can utilize. So it's really not looking at the third prong of time, place, and manner. It's really looking at whether you eviscerate that particular type of speech. And I believe that San Martino carried that over from the Elrod case.
Well, Elrod wasn't even an actual speech case, right? It was a governmental patronage case, wasn't it?
Yes, that's correct. But I believe
so. It's not a very good analogy.
Well, except many cases like San Martino have been following Elrod.
Right. Well, and so that's why I thought San Martino was more relevant, because it was a case in which they couldn't speak inside. They couldn't wear their shirts inside the courthouse, but they could wear right outside the courthouse, right?
That's correct, yes.
And they could presumably reach the same audience before they went into the courthouse. So in terms of alternatives, there were certainly alternatives.
Sure, they had plenty of other alternatives. And that's why I'm saying it's a completely different test than the third prong of time, place, and manner.
So you have other alternatives here also, and then how do you have a hardship?
A hardship in this regard? Well, it's not a hardship. It's a balancing of the hardships. And you're balancing free speech, which is one of our...
Well, how does that tip in your favor?
You're balancing...
It's free speech?
Because you're affecting free speech, and you're balancing that against litter prevention, and there's no evidence in the record whatsoever that there's even a litter problem with vehicle leafleting.
Well, does a municipality have to make findings of fact every time it enacts an ordinance? This ordinance is named litter. It has a whole bunch of provisions in it. It seems clear what the purpose of the ordinance is, at least to me.
It is clear. Litter and litter alone.
Yeah. And then you have to define litter, of course. But
to answer your question, you're balancing free speech, which is one of our most cherished rights in this country, versus something that might be a problem, might not be a problem. We don't know, because the city has presented absolutely no evidence.
Well, I suppose it is how you approach hardship. Is it hardship in communicating, or is it hardship because you're balancing litter against speech?
Well, I think you're balancing the hardships to both sides, litter against speech. And there's, like I say, there's no evidence that there's a litter problem.
But aside from there being no evidence that there's a litter problem, I mean, isn't there, again, several binding Supreme Court cases saying that litter is simply not an interest under these circumstances? I don't understand what the difference is. They basically say if you have a litter problem, ban the litter.
Are you referring to the
Schneider, Martin, yes. Strutters, and so on?
Yes, that line of cases, you know, basically stands for the proposition, which this case also said in the Carreras case, annoyance and inconvenience, however, are a small price to pay for preservation of our most cherished rights. And that's another way of saying that, you know, from the Ninth Circuit.
But on the balance, there's also the question of aesthetics that the Supreme Court has dealt with.
And if the city had enacted its law and had named aesthetics as one of its goals, that would be an issue here.
But well, isn't litter a blight on aesthetics? Can't you say that there is a relationship between the two?
There could be, but in those cases where it's really been an issue have been the billboard signs. Again, where you're leaving a sign up for long periods of time.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the issue is. Is the aesthetics problem one of the offense to the eye of the papers on the windshield as opposed to the litter on the street? Or is litter, in addition to being litter, an aesthetics problem? Because I thought that was the problem about litter, basically, was that it gave you a dirty city instead of a clean city.
And there were really two issues there. The first one is whether, because the city never named aesthetics or...
Well, forget that. Doesn't litter comprehend aesthetics? We don't want litter because the streets look messy. Isn't that aesthetics?
But the courts have held that you have to actually name it.
But isn't the problem that, yes, litter on the street is an aesthetic problem, but unlike other aesthetic problems, it's fixable, i.e. somebody can pick it up. And so the real problem is that the city then incurs the cost of picking it up. It's not like signs and stuff which are just going to stay there. It's easy to fix, except it costs money. And the question, it seems to me, which was addressed by the cases in the 30s, is exact that at the does the balance and says, as between speech and the city's obligation to pick up litter, the speech wins, especially because the city can do other things like prosecute people who throw things on the ground. So I don't know why that's not a resolved question. I don't know why we're worried about that piece of it.
It's unresolved only because, as far as I know, there hasn't been a Supreme Court case that has the fact pattern of vehicle leafleting in front of it. So we couldn't really shift it from homeowners in a home, leafleting in a home versus leafleting.
And on the street, too. But leafleting on the street. And I mean, as a practical matter, when you're talking about leafleting on the street, people don't have time to look at the thing to see whether they want it or not, so they take it. And then they either throw it out or don't throw it out. I mean, yes, it's supposed to be a willing listener, but the number of people who actually don't take it is probably not enormous because it's a pain in the neck. When I walk down the street, somebody hands me something, I take it, and then I do whatever I'm going to do with it. I look at it.
I refuse something that's offered to me. So, you know, I don't think you can make a general determination.
But in any event, there's no... The other interest that's being asserted is the interest in protecting people's private property from stuff on it that they may not want. So how does that interest work with regard to the balancing right now on a plenary injunction?
Well, my first argument would be that it's not a valid interest in this case because the city never claimed that interest when they enacted the law. And this court in Desert Outdoor stated that you actually have to have the reasons for an ordinance stated in the ordinance itself for it to apply. And, for example, we know litter is the problem. That's the problem the city identified when it enacted the law. It never identified the protection of private property as one of its interests.
But in the littering statute, you find this particular ordinance that's under attack. And that talks about putting material on a car.
That's correct. But how is that any difference than putting a a leaflet on a home.
Well, do you have any cases about leaflets on homes? I mean, about leaving leaflets on the doorstep or throwing New York Times over the fence as opposed to handing it to somebody, knocking on the door and handing it to somebody.
I don't have any cases with me, but I have a great quote from the Watchtower case, which was handed down about 6 years ago. And it says, quote, for over 50 years, the court has invalidated restrictions on door-to-door canvassing and pamphleteering.
Yeah, but that doesn't deal with the precise question of whether you can leave something, whether the government, for example, could pass a statute saying, yeah, you can knock on the door and you can try and give something to somebody, but if nobody's home, you can't leave it on the doorstep.
There's clearly case law on that point. I
couldn't find it. If I'd be curious.
Okay. Would you like me to submit something if I can find it? Mm-hmm.
It may be assumed in these cases, but I don't know that it's ever been pulled out.
That could be. It could be an assumption, but I'll take a second look at that. I know one issue that was raised. I believe it does make a difference whether the forum is private or public property in this case, because the government has much more leeway to control speech on its own property and has much less authority to control speech on private property. So I believe the forum analysis is important in this case, and that's why I briefed it so thoroughly.
All right. I think your time is up also, unless you have something urgent.
No, I think that covers it, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right. Case just argued will be submitted. The final case of the morning is Halicki v. Carroll Shelby International.